Chapter 22. I scrubbed the last of the dirt and sweat off my aching body, and tried not to think of the phrase, not good. That was the second time the issue with Arcus Dohler had been described as not good, and the fact everyone seemed to be holding something back about the dude didn't sit well with me. I didn't know how much Shay told Zoe about her father, but the avian siblings at least seemed to be preparing me for the worst. Honestly, the worst the letter could be about would be another duelist challenge. To my knowledge, Dohler held a lower duelist rank than me, so he could ostensibly duel me. In fact, I had a feeling that's where all of this was going anyway. From what I could tell, Arcus Dohler had a mighty chip on his shoulder when it came to both of his children, and because I wasn't a cruel bastard like Ren was, and actually did basic human things like not cheat and steal, and wasn't abusive or rejecting, apparently that put me on his shit list. So be it. Arch-fuck douchebag was a thorn in my side that would eventually have to go, that was for certain. It was just the manner in which he went that was plaguing me. My instincts had never let me down so far, and right now they were telling me the challenge I would soon be facing would be a tough one, and I would have to rely on every scrap of resourcefulness and the support of the people around me in order to succeed. It was a good thing the people who were in my corner were pretty fucking awesome then. When I remembered this, I felt galvanized instead of daunted about my task, and as I let the last of the bathwater drain away, a quiet confidence grew within me as steadfast as an oak. No matter what fresh hell I would be walking into once I left the steamy comfort of the bathroom, I would be supported from within, just like that barn. This I knew down in my marrow. So by the time we packed the carriage, said goodbye to Arvid, Jenner, and the Raccoon Brothers, and finally set off, I was calm and prepared to listen to whatever it was Shay and Zoe had to tell me. "So, sister, what did our dearest father have to say to our Alex?" Horace asked before I could breach the topic. I could tell he was trying to be more casual than he probably was, because a small line appeared between his eyebrows, similar to Shay whenever she was anxious.
"It will probably come as a shock to no one that our father has likewise obtained a writ from Gatetown's magistrate, Gellivane,"
the Phoenix woman started, while she brought a small wicker-like chest out from under the carriage's bench seat.
"And yes, it appears he would like to challenge Alex to a duel."
She then set the chest on her lap, opened the lid, and began to hand out small, cloth-wrapped bundles she had prepared as a little snack to tide us all over so we could get on the road. Inside were circular slices of dried meat, kind of like salami, along with cubes of sharp cheese, tangy orange berries, and a variety of nuts that ranged from sweet to sour. It wasn't a full meal, but it was satisfying all the same, and my stomach and I were grateful Shay had the foresight to think ahead like this. "You are right, babe," I said as I tossed something that tasted like a pickled walnut into my mouth. "I'm absolutely not shocked your dad wants to duel me." "Unshocked, is that a thing?" "I don't think that is a thing," Horace said, as he took two bundles from Shay so he could pass one out the carriage window to Rylan, who was sitting shotgun. "Well, I'm so not shocked I made up a thing, and that thing is called being unshocked," I argued back, completely logically. "I am as well," Horace bantered back and rubbed his chin. "I'm so unshocked I might be dead."
Okay, you two,
Shay said and nudged her brother in his knee as if she was annoyed. However, I saw the tension in her shoulders visibly loosen, and I was glad our antics were working.
"Alex, aren't you concerned?"
Zoe asked as she nibbled on a hunk of cheese. "Don't get me wrong, I'm not taking this lightly," I said, and hooked my toe around the back of her ankle where she sat across from me. "I know the dumbest thing to do now is to underestimate my enemy, don't worry. I just know it doesn't matter because I have you guys to prepare me." My catwife's sapphire blue eyes widened, and a blush stained her lovely high cheekbones as if she was pleasantly startled by the sincerity of my words.
Which is what brings us to our next thing,"
Zoe said, as she tucked a piece of her flyaway hair behind her so she could look me in the eyes.
"More training, and fast."
"I'm game," I said, and leaned forward. "More stuff with swords?"
"Actually, no,"
Shay said, and glanced at her brother.
"A contest of swords will not work against our father."
"Why is that?" I asked. "Before our father got into the breeding business, he used to be part of the Vothan armies before retiring here to Nata," Horace explained. "He is unparalleled when it comes to combat in close quarters. but that is mostly due to his glass eye. Shay and I have known for some time that his eye is actually an enchanted artifact that allows him to see his opponent's moves almost before they make them. A little like how your time trance works, Chief. Okay, what about barehanded? It's kind of my calling card, I guess, I shrugged as I munched on a few of the berries. They popped like jelly boba, and it was by far one of my favorite fruits I've tried on Nada. Well, if it weren't for the fact that Arcus Dola's head is the same height as Prosper, I would say sure, go for it, Horace snorted. Oh, shit, I remarked, and rubbed the back of my neck. Prosper's head placed him at about 7.5 feet.
However, the price of my father's enchanted glass eye has cost him the use of his long-range vision.
Shade jumped in before I could get too discouraged.
He can't see more than 2 arms' lengths in front of him.
So I need to fight him from far away, I guessed. But I'm not very good at fighting with long-range weapons. I would be a sitting duck the moment he opened fire, shit vision or not. What is a duck? Horace asked. Where I come from, a duck is a bird that likes to swim on top of the water, I said, like a helpful zoo book.
You won't need to learn all of the ancient ways of archery fighting,
Zoe chimed in.
Shay and Jenner found a way for you to control the duel.
Now I'm interested, I said, and Horace nodded his head too.
Many seasons ago, a duelist was challenged by another who wanted to gain his beautiful wife for his own.
The Phoenix Woman began in her storytelling voice.
The challenged duelist was ailing with a sickness of the bones, which made him neither strong nor fast. However, his hands were still steady, so he proposed that they fight with bow and arrow, but in a unique way.
Are you referring to a helix standoff? The Falcon Man asked and sat up straight.
Indeed. Elmet Helix was the duelist who thought of this way to fight. He proposed to his challenger that they fight with bow and arrow, but only taking one shot at a time. He tricked his opponent by telling him the greatest honor lied in defeating his foe, a feeble man such as he, by only taking one shot from across the field. Helix was even so gracious as to redefine parameters of their duel over an amicable meal, and offered to even concede the first shot to him, his challenger.
Smart, I commented.
Very.
Zoe agreed as her ears pricked forward in interest.
What happened? Did Helix win? No. Actually, the other duelist shot him right between the eyes,
Shay said, and her shoulders deflated a little. I started to say, as I tried to think of the most delicate way to break it to her that her story wasn't as inspiring as she was probably going for.
No, that's good for us, I promise,
the animated Phoenix Woman said, and launched back into her vibrant storytelling mode.
Because Helix's story was a miserable failure. Not many people have read about it in the history books.
And you have? I asked. My little sister is kind of a strange one, Horace joked, and shoved at his sister's legs with his booted foot.
Strange or not, I can see how this could give us a tactical advantage,
Zoe said, and I could see the gears turning behind her intelligent gaze.
I'm assuming your father is unfamiliar with this story as well.
Oh, that would be a fair assumption, the Falcon Man muttered with a dark expression. If it doesn't tell him how to gain more power or status, he is ill-inclined to want to learn about it. Pity for him he never learned the most important thing about reading history is to learn from past mistakes, I said with a large grin, as I was starting to click together how this was supposed to go. So when I show up, I'm able to set the parameters of the duel like the whole William Tell / Russian roulette deal. You mean Helix standoff? Horace corrected. Yeah, that, I said with a roll of my eyes. Because I'm being challenged, I get to pick the weapon, which is bow and arrow, and then tell him we're going to do the Helix thing.
Yes and no,
Zoe said.
Usually it is that simple, but because Dollar has brought forth a writ, any new parameters must be at least discussed beforehand.
What exactly are his grounds for dueling me? I finally asked, before I addressed the fact I really would have to break bread with the guy who had me pegged for death.
Oh, it's silly, really,
Shay huffed.
He claims you are a part of a plot to assassinate Lord Mech, and in all good conscience, he can't leave his vulnerable daughter to the wiles of some conniving rapscallion or some such rot.
Am I a conniving rapscallion? I snorted. The worst of the worst, Horace confirmed sadly, as if he just diagnosed me with terminal cancer. Okay, well, when does he want to liberate you from my wiles? I asked.
He has requested the duel take place 2 days from now in the village square battle hall at dawn,
Zoe said, and I felt like I should be hearing the cry of the eagle from the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Coincidentally, this is the morning after your clandestine meeting with Mr. Tovish. It seems too perfect to be luck.
Are you suggesting Tovish is mixed up with Dola? Horace asked the Catwoman.
I'm saying it's extremely likely, but I do not believe he would do so willingly,
she answered, as her ears flattened against her head.
We know someone bigger is behind this duelist writ, and my guess is they are the same person with their thumb on Tovish.
Oh, poor Tovish,
Shay sighed.
I have yet to meet the fascinating archivist, but from what I hear, he is a tough little man.
Hopefully I'll be able to do something about his predicament when I see him, I said, and patted my sympathetic phoenix wife on the back of her hand. However, I wanted to tell the both of you thanks for handling the letter like that. Have you sent anything back at all?
No, we were waiting until you had all the details first,
Zoe explained. Good, I said, as I started to see the overarching plan they'd been working toward. When we get to the second estate, I will send a reply with Rufus. Do you think the Gold Seeker will be there by the time we arrive?
I sent him ahead this morning, so he should already be there,
Shay said. Awesome, I said with another megawatt smile. I'll invite Dola over to discuss parameters. Meanwhile, I'm assuming you guys are going to teach me how to win against him using the Helix method. There really will be no time to lose once we get... there, the Falcon Man remarked. By the way, can you put all of us out of our misery and choose a name for the second estate already? I'm working on it. But to be honest, renaming my second estate is kind of low on my list of priorities at the moment, H, I said, and shoulder-bumped him. Fine, keep us all on tenterhooks, he said, as he nudged me back. But before we start training in earnest, there is the matter of forging you a protective amulet. Since there is still light left today, I'm hoping we may knock this out before nightfall so you can have more time wearing it and letting the core's protective attributes soak in.
Meanwhile, Zoe and I can prepare the training arena to better suit our purposes before we start,
Shay said, and then turned to the Catwoman.
Then you and I will get a selection of bows from the armory. I will leave the picking up to you because you seem to know what's best on that front.
I will gladly offer my assistance,
Zoe nodded, and her tail swished to and fro. Good, I said. And then I tucked myself between my two beautiful wives with an arm flung over each as I kissed the tops of their heads. Once you teach me how to fire an arrow, we'll be off to the races.
There isn't any racing until... Oh, wait.
Shay frowned and pursed her lips.
This is one of those traveler sayings, isn't it?
Now you're learning. I quickly kissed my phoenix wife on her pert nose and then kissed Zoe on her forehead. I like the plan so far, guys. Instead of full-fledged combat with a bow and arrow, all I have to do is stand there and learn how to aim. Easier said than done, Chief, Horace said, and clapped me on the shoulder. Good thing I have you to teach me, then, I grinned, and then shoved him off. I'm going to go check on Rylan and keep him company for a few.
Alex!
The kid startled when he saw me crawl out of the window, and he immediately began pulling on Prosper's reins. No, keep it going, I said, as I made my way to the top of the cab where Rylan was sitting in the coach seat. I sat on the bench next to him and knocked my knee into his. How's it going, bud?
Fine,
he said, but he darted me a furtive glance from the corner of his eye. I don't buy that for a second. What's the matter, kiddo? Rylan tensed up and remained silent as he visibly thought about how to answer me, and I frowned as I waited for him to gather his tempestuous thoughts.
There's something I'll have to tell you, Alex, and I'm afraid you'll be mad,
he finally admitted. You do know that even if you make me mad, nothing changes, right? I'm not going to send you away or anything. You're stuck with us, remember? I squeezed his rigid shoulder when I said this, and I hoped it telegraphed my sincerity more than my words could.
I used to think that with my other parents, but I eventually made them mad enough they left me behind,
he said in a small voice as he twisted Prosper's reins in his hands. Well, what is it you think you've done that's so horrible? I pried gently. I wanted to get to the bottom of Rylan's sordid origins, especially given what Gordo mentioned at the gates of Ithaca, and how the boy still seemed to tiptoe around the subject. The timid stable boy took a breath as if steeling himself for the inevitable fallout from my reaction.
I think I was so worried about taking care of your herald corps that I must have hidden it when I was, sleeping,
he rambled and twisted the reins even harder until his fingers grew a little purple.
"And now I can't find it because I don't remember."
"Because you were sleeping," I clarified.
Yeah, you know,"
he said again, and his hand twisted until I reached over and untangled the poor digits so they could regain some circulation. "I wish you would have come to me sooner about this, Rye," I tisked, and then rubbed his hands between mine to increase blood flow.
"Are you really mad?"
he whispered. "No, just concerned that you've been feeling in the pits this whole time about a small misunderstanding," I said, and then reached into my pants pocket for the ruby-red Herald core I took from him when he did his little swan dive off the bookcase.
"You have it? But how?"
"You remember sleepwalking, but you don't remember me taking this from you before I put you back to bed," I said, then placed the core into his now normal-colored hands.
"No, I don't remember,"
he muttered bashfully, and gazed down at the crimson surface of the gem.
"Did you say sleepwalking?"
"Yeah, that's what people where I come from call it," I said, and I was startled by the suddenly pensive and serious expression on his face as he looked at me.
"People walk when they sleep where you come from, and nobody's scared of them?"
he asked hollowly. "No, that would be a ridiculous thing to be afraid of. Why do you ask?" Ryland didn't answer, and instead of trying to pry any more out of him, I just let him be, especially when he scooted in and leaned against my side as if he was still tired, poor guy. There were still things I wanted to ask him, but there would be time to do so later, so we spent the rest of the ride in companionable silence. Eventually, Ryland did nod off, and I had to wrap my arm around him so he wouldn't fall off the carriage. I was concerned he would drop the Herald Corps, but even in his sleep he must have been worried about losing it, because he kept his fist clenched tightly around it. Finally, the shining white stables of the estate came into view, and I guided Prosper with one hand up to the gates.
Are we here?
Ryland asked, and scrubbed his eyes. Yep, rise and shine, I said, and took my arm back from around his shoulders so he could stretch and take back the reins.
I still have this,
Ryland said, and handed me back the Herald Corps he had clutched in his fist. Thanks, bud, I said, and stashed the crimson gem back in my pocket. If you want, Horace is going to teach me how to make this into an amulet later, and you're more than welcome to learn, too.
Okay,
he grinned, and wiggled a little in his seat. The early oppressive storm clouds over his head seemed to have vanished completely, and he was back to being his enthusiastic self. When we all stopped in front of the carriage house, Rylan and I jumped down as the others piled out of the cab.
Welcome back, Master Alex,
the capable badger woman said as she gestured for two of the other staff to start bringing out the various baggage. Nevra, just Alex is fine, I said with a smile and a small bow. Thanks for holding down the place while I was gone.
Of course, sir,
she simpered in her high-pitched voice.
Nevra,
Shay said,
we have another order to be placed with the woodcutters this afternoon. Do you also know if any Omite glass traders are in the market today?
A few quarry overseers just came in with the most recent merchant ships,
Nevra said as she loaded her surprisingly strong arms up with boxes and bags.
They've opened a temporary store where orders can be placed.
Oh, splendid,
my phoenix wife said and clapped her hands a little.
Please bring me a small purse full of gold enough for the woodcutter and for the Omite glass merchants.
Nevra, Horace interjected, Alex and I are also going to the old forge. Can you bring me a silver ingot from the vault as well? Actually, make that two.
Oh, sure thing, Mr. Horace.
The badger-faced woman smiled a smile that made her cheeks fluff out, and then she hurried away with her orders. Are you and Zoe going to the market now? I asked.
We might as well, since you boys will be working in the smelly forge,
Shay said as she looped her arm through Zoe's.
I hope you don't mind, husband, but we might bring back a few items not on our list.
I absolutely do not mind. In fact, spend the rest of the day shopping for anything you can think we might need for either Ithaca or this estate.
Okay, that's it,
Horace huffed, and turned to me with a pointed finger.
None of us are moving anywhere until Alex names this bloody place. First thing you think of, go.
No, don't do that,
Shay argued.
It should be a meaningful and well-thought-out name. I don't want to have to rename it because you all thought it was a good idea to name it Fungus or something equally horrid.
Why would the first thing on my mind be Fungus? I laughed at the Phoenix woman's logic, but I could also see her point, as well as Horace's.
Well, I don't know, but you understand, don't you?
She asked, Of course, I'm just teasing you, sweetheart, I said, and tweaked her perfect nose. But I agree with Horace. This place needs a name to start feeling more like home.
What about Arcarian Estates?
Ryland suddenly piped up and added his 2 cents to the mix.
That's basically how you ended up getting this place. It was after the Arcarian races, and this is one of the most well-renowned canterflower stables on Nata.
Arcarian Estates, I tried. I think it has a nice ring, actually.
Oh, good work, Ry-Ry,
Shay enthused and ruffled his sandy mop of hair until the stable boy blushed.
I agree,
Zoe said with her own quiet smile.
It is clever and a pleasing combination to the ear.
Oh, finally,
Horace celebrated by doing a goofy jig right where he stood.
Arcarian Estates it is, but maybe Arcarian for short.
The motion passes. This place has finally been christened, I cheered as well, and then roughly looped my arm around my boy's neck so I could give him a noogie.
Great. Well, Zoe and I are going to catch up with Nevra so we can pull a little more out of the vault,
Shay said.
I already have a list of items that we're all running low on.
Have a good time on the town, you two, I said after I kissed them each once more on the lips. Be careful.
Always.
My cat wife purred, and then she tickled me on the nose with her tail when she spun around and followed Shay. I hate to see them leave, but I sure do like to watch them go, I sighed to Horace as I watched each perfectly round derriere flounce away.
You are ridiculously entranced, my friend,
the Falcon Man shook his head, as if he felt sorry for me. Ridiculously entranced is a fine place to be. You'll see one day. I'd bet my last gold piece on it, I said with a smirk. Now, let's get Prosper out of this harness. We'll take both him and Victory to the Jewel House. I bet they would like a chance to catch up and stretch their wings. Rylan, can you go prepare Victory while I do props?
Sure,
he said, and then ran off in the direction of the large stables. I told the kid he could come and watch us work, by the way, I said to Horace, as we both undid the carriage from Prosper's harness and then stowed the cab in the carriage house. I hope that was all right.
Yeah, he can come,
he shrugged. But I think I better ride Victory since you'll have Rylan with you, I'm assuming. Unless Uncle Horace wants to let the boy ride with him, I teased, and nudged him in the side. Uncle Horace thinks you should ride with Prosper and Rylan because Uncle Horace doesn't normally like flying, the Falcon Man said as he stroked Prosper's mane. And because Prosper is a crazy bastard and likes to fly as if his hair is on fire, don't you, boy? The proud canterfly snorted and tossed his glossy black head. Come on, let's meet Rye and Victory at the stables where Prosper can have his mini-reunion and take a drink. When we got to the stables, we all had no choice but to let Victory and Prosper take a few laps around the grounds because they were much too excited to listen to any sort of commands. It was kind of adorable, actually, and I would have let them fly around forever if it weren't for the fact the sun was starting to slowly make its way toward the horizon. So, reluctantly, I sent the image to Prosper that he could fly with Victory through the Jewel House gardens for as long as he liked once he delivered us there. At the prospect of being able to return to his frolicking, Prosper glided down to the ground with Victory beside him so we could all mount and fly over the large grounds that probably would have taken us at least 30 minutes to walk to. "Go play, boy," I instructed my trusty canterfly with a fond pat on his neck after Rylan and I dismounted. Prosper whistled and then nuzzled me with his coiled butterfly snout before he took off into the air again with the dazzling canter filly right on his hoofs.
Seems like everyone is pairing off these days, Horace sighed, and we all took another moment to admire the powerful grace of the two creatures looping and spiraling around each other as the sunlight flashed off their stained glass wings.
Still not too late for you, H, I needled.
No way, definitely not,
the Falcon Man said, and shook his black-feathered head emphatically.
Yeah, me neither,
Ryland joined in and crossed his arms over his skinny chest.
Oh, really?
I arched an eyebrow at him as we both followed Horace to a small stone fireplace set up a ways behind the Jewel House.
You might feel differently when you get a little older. Never, he said, and stuck out his tongue in a truly juvenile fashion. Same goes for me, double, Horace said, and also stuck out his tongue. Plus, girls have woot mites, don't they, Rye?
A scat ton of woot mites,
he agreed without skipping a beat. The fact that Aventolian schoolchildren apparently had a version of cooties, basically called wooties, juxtaposed with Horace and Ryland's dead serious expressions, made me laugh so hard it was actually a struggle to breathe. This had the added benefit of making Horace and Ryland join in,
until we were all howling our heads off like a pack of hyenas.
Well,
I said, as I tried to rein in my breathing. Fucking, oops. I mean, freaking hell, guys. Stop, my ribs hurt. Show me how to do the thing, damn it, before I asphyxiate myself.
Okay, lads, button up.
The Falcon Man grew serious, or tried to, even though I could still see his mouth twitching.
We'll be playing with hot fire, molten metal, and sharp objects, so now is the time to turn ourselves to attention.
Right, okay, H, take it away, I said, and stood next to the large stone hearth with my hands clasped in front of me like a proper student. And then when Rylan did the same, I nodded at the Falcon Man. We're ready.
So the first thing we need to do is build up the heat so our coals are hot enough to melt metal,
Horace seemed to transform just then, as he rubbed his hands together. He seemed relaxed and in his element, and his eyes glowed gold as they darted around the forge the Omites left behind.
Ah, okay. Look for pieces of wood like this.
He held up a split log of something that looked like mahogany, with a little bit of purple tinge to it.
This is ferrous wood, and it comes from the ferrous tree. It burns the hottest and longest of all the woods native to Nata Isle. Some even say it is imbued with magic. Find as much as you can, even though we won't need much for right now. Chances are we'll be back to use this at a later time.
How about we race to see who can find 10 logs the fastest, I suggested, and both Horace and Rylan's eyes sparkled at the challenge.
You're on,
Rylan said.
I've already started, lads,
Horace bellowed as he tossed down the ferrous log he was already holding.
One.
No fair, Uncle Horace,
the stable boy shouted and sprinted off to try and find his pieces.
You're both going down,
I yelled, and joined the fray by running all over the hills and along the forest for my own logs. In the end, Horace did win only because he counted the first log he picked up, but all of us were too winded with the rush of pleasant exertion to really care.
Would you like to start the fire, Rylan?
Horace offered, as he took 2 objects out of his ever-present pack that looked like 2 pieces of black obsidian and were shiny like mirrors.
Sure.
Rylan grinned and clacked them together over the modest pile of logs in the hearth.
Alex, get the bellows working,
Horace then instructed, and pointed to the weird accordion-like contraption on the side. When I took the 2 handles like he indicated and squeezed the accordion part of the device, a draft of air blew out of the pointed nozzle designed to feed the fledgling flames. Soon we had a roaring blaze that incinerated the ferrous wood into scorching hot coals in no time.
Pardon me, sirs, but I have the items you requested, Mr. Horace,
a voice said from behind us, and caused us all to turn around.
Nevra, what perfect timing!
The Falcon Man clapped his hands together once and headed over so he could gather a few solid silver bars about the size of a deck of cards.
I also brought you a crucible,
the Badger Woman said, and pulled a large iron bowl from the satchel around her portly waist.
The one the Omites left behind was sold off by Bala.
Of course it was, the reprobate,
he grumbled with a dark scowl. But then he brightened when he took the crucible from Nevra.
But thank you for having the foresight. I didn't even notice one was missing yet. That would have been a short lesson.
Don't stay out too late now,
she said in a motherly way, and we all waved at her as she scurried back in the direction she came from.
Where were we?
Horace asked.
We were stirring the fire,
Rylan answered, as he stood with an iron poker in his hands.
Is it hot enough yet, Uncle Horace?
Let's see, the metallurgist said, as he tossed me the silver ingots, and then he went over to grab a set of metal tongs, bowed in the middle, that looked like it could hold something cylindrical. He used them to hold the crucible out to me, which I took meant I should drop one of the small bars of silver into it. Then he nestled the crucible into the bed of coals, glowing so hotly I felt the actual sweat evaporate right off my face. On the hearth where the crucible sat, a glowing blue ring appeared in the white stone hearth as if the crucible was sitting on a fiber-optic drink coaster.
That's different, I remarked. Even though we don't have an Omite crucible, the whole hearth is made of the same type of stone, and it recognizes what's inside whatever is placed upon it,
the Falcon Man explained. So basically the Omites invented a smart stove, I deadpanned, as my mind boggled with the fact people like Arvid conquered this level of technology among peoples who were barely out of the Bronze Age in a lot of respects.
If whatever you said means that the hearth will glow red when it has reached its ideal temperature for whatever's inside the crucible, then yes,
the Falcon Man said with a crooked grin. Blue means it is almost there, so it shouldn't be that much longer. Here, take a look at this. Rylan and I watched as Horace rummaged in his pack he set aside on the ground and pulled out a handful of metal plates that he then wanted us to pass around. Each one was about the size of a Polaroid photo and about 5 times as thick. But what was truly interesting about them was that each one had a specific design stamped into it. They were all shapes and sizes, circles, squares, ovals, squarish ovals, stars, etc., and had a particular teardrop-shaped impression right at the top.
"What are these?"
Rylan asked, as I suddenly realized just what I was holding. "They're pendant molds," I said. "You pour the melted metal inside and let it harden into this shape so you can mount a jewel or crystal in it."
"Exactly so,"
Horace nodded and peeked inside the crucible.
"The silver is almost melted, lads. Pick you a mold."
I pulled the Herald core out of my pocket and held it up for Rylan and I to observe.
"What do you think, bud?"
I asked the stable boy. "Which design should we go for to make this into an amulet?"
"Hmm,"
he hummed and fixed his intense focus on the gem.
"I think because the core is nearly a perfect circle, we should go with the same mold."
"Circular amulet it is," I said, and set all but the circular mold aside.
"Okay, Alex, now slide the mold down between these 2 metal pieces.
Horace instructed as he grabbed the crucible off its glowing red hearth coaster. Right in front of the hearth were 2 metal prongs that had a slot cut out in each where something the same length and width of the mold could be placed into them like a lens, so I did as instructed.
"Good. Now step on that iron pedal you see below you," he ordered next.
"Got it," I said, when I located the aforementioned pedal under the hearth. A mechanical click sounded, followed by the noise of grinding gears, and the little window frame that held my mold suddenly flipped down flat.
"Okay, now back, both of you. I don't want you to get splashed with silver," the metallurgist said,
and I tugged Rylan back to a distance I felt kept us both safe. Then Horace tipped the crucible with his tongs until a thin stream of molten silver trickled down into the upturned mold. It made a hissing noise, and I backed us up another step just in case.
"Wow, that looked like water, Alex,"
Rylan gasped with one of his typical puppy dog wiggles.
"Did you see that?"
"Yeah, bud, I saw," I laughed and ruffled his hair.
"Now we just wait for it to cool, and then I will show you how to set the gem,"
Horace said, as he banked the coals and set the crucible and tongs aside to a cooler part of the hearth.
"I wonder how—"
Rylan started, but then he jumped at the sudden sound of another hiss ricocheting off the amplifying jewel house.
"What was that?"
"The silver cooling, maybe?" I suggested, and then jumped again when another sharp hiss rang out, followed by a familiar growl.
"It's definitely not the silver,"
Horace said, as his eyebrows pinched together.
"No, it's Zoe," I breathed, as realization finally struck. "It's the sound she makes when she is distressed."
The second the words left my lips, a long
growl
rent the air, and my heart dropped.